thanks once again for downloading and listening to a podcast from Celtic Underground. We are in the 21st year and the 20th season of the world's longest running football fans podcast. You can subscribe by going to thecelticunderground.substack.com and you will get correspondence, articles, emails straight to your inbox. You can pay a little bit of money and you will get exclusive content straight to your inbox. And if you go online and look on our website, you can still, you don't need to be on the Substack app, you can get all the podcasts on your usual provider. Anyway, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, saying enjoy the latest podcast.
Misery loves company. That's what the wise man said. The remedy.
We are recording this on Monday night. It's 8 o'clock. If you like your Celtic fans podcast, this will probably be one of about 30 that you'll be able to pick up on Tuesday. Since everybody be rushing to record a podcast. Following the news tonight that Celtic have sacked Wilfred Nancy after 33 days, 4 days less than the temporary period that the Martin O'Neill was in charge before the current temporary period. So before we get into the nitty-gritty of it, just to check everybody, Andrew, Matthew, Ross, are you pleased with the announcement that Nancy's gone? Matthew, start with you.
Yeah, he had to go. There's no, I think pleased is perhaps the wrong word, and we spoke about it before we came on. It feels, I think in the last week I've seen quite a few people post online, you know, the sort of the famous Bobby Ewing shower scene from Dallas, and I sort of hope we're going to get to the end of the season and that's how this is sort of going to feel. There's just going to be this moment where we ask ourselves, did that actually happen? You know, was there a temporary period, especially given that Martin O'Neill's coming back? It'd be very easy to tell yourself, Brendan Rodgers was here for the start of the season, he left, Martin O'Neill came in and he stayed to the end of the season and nothing else happened whatsoever in between. I think it would be tempting to say that. I think what was remarkable, it just sort of brings it home. Just before I came on, I was just sort of playing about. I always keep a record of like months in charge of managers, just out of sort of interesting record. And today I added Wilfred Nancy to that list, which is also, of course, the same day that I've taken out, you know, I've removed them from that. But to put it in context, I mean, you said yourself, Brian, 33 days in charge, or 1 month, that would be another way to put it. I know this is a little unfair, but that compares to 514 months in charge for Willie Mealy. So it's just a little bit of a difference. I don't take any pleasure in the sense, on a human level, you know, I know he's well remunerated. I understand, you know, as a manager, he's not going to be worried about feeding himself or his family or anything like that. But he's obviously, you know, basically ripped up his life back in America, assumed that he's coming here for, you know, the next stage of his life, and it's completely ripped apart now. I don't bear him any ill will. I hope he goes on to do something well himself, but there's no ambiguity. It was the right decision. And if you were criticising it at all, apart from the initial appointment, the only thing is, really, I would have done it on Saturday, to be perfectly honest.
Andrew?
Yeah, I mean, it's like Ross's little kind of subdeck there. I'm kind of relieved. I'm kind of relieved for him as much as anything else, because he was becoming a kind of human pinata. He was just getting battered from all sides, battered by the results, battered by all the external factors, battered by us and the support, and battered by the media, you know. But I must say, I feel a little hollow. I always want Celtic to be different, but let's be honest about it, this shows we're no different from any other club now. These things will happen. This is the modern way of football. It had to be done. We said that a week ago, it had to be done. We were kind of looking for it almost before, straight after the Motherwell game when we did our last podcast, that we were looking for this change because it just wasn't going to work. It was funny, I was looking at Amarin in a funny sort of way. I wondered if the board looked at that, because Amarin's first 11 league games in charge, he lost 6, he drew 3, and he won 3, and you thought, well, give him some time. But then 14 months down the line, the decision ends up the same way. You've just squandered a year and a bit. So I feel hollow. I feel hollow because, like Matthew says, I take no pleasure in anybody losing their job. And I've lost my job recently. And I know what that does to you. And I know what it does to your self-esteem. So it feels raw. And it just feels like an ungodly mess.
I'm the same as you on that, Andrew. No matter how well he's remunerated, I can't help but feel sorry for him on a human level. I think even more so because there was that picture of him with his young kids at McDonald's. They'll have spent December trying to sort out schools for their kids starting today, probably. And that's all finished. And okay, he's well remunerated, you know, and in a wee while's telling me it'll all be sorted. But in the moment, that's not great. And again, it's, you know, the thing I often say to people as well when people are quick to, oh, we need to sack him. Have you ever actually sacked another human? Have you ever actually put another person out of a job? Because it's not a really nice thing to do, to put somebody out of a job, no matter how much they're earning. It's really not. From a human perspective, it's not good. But it just all feels avoidable. Ross, your thoughts on it?
I'm not happy. Relieved. Relieved for him. Relieved for us. I actually think his sacking and Paul Tisdale's sacking, probably more important of the two, in the grand scheme of things, is just more signs of what has been a long list of failures from a board who have just seemed to be making a habit of making really bad decisions. I don't see today as sort of like a situation where they can present it as we've dealt with something on our own terms. It's like I said this to Andrew, it's like they've come to the end of a road and there was two directions. But both directions, you could see the end of both those roads. One of them is give him January, give Paul Tisdale the opportunity to potentially oversee January. And then in a month or two's time, you know, we probably hit this exact same situation because I don't see how any volume of signings was going to change the overriding factors, which were a support base that didn't really have any faith in him. Players didn't have any faith in him. I think players were at the point where they were beginning to answer questions in a manner that came across as them trying not to be disrespectful to him. But it was clear, it was like they were stalling, waiting for this to happen. You know, people are talking about the Luke McCown interview that came out yesterday. And that's probably a great example of where the players are. And then the fact that, you know, players privately appear to be being quite open about how unhappy they were. So I just see it as a day where I'm relieved. If I'm being brutally honest, I am happy that Tisdale's gone because I kind of look at Tisdale as an example of every problem the club has got right now. You've got a guy who was inflated into a position of head of football operations. And I think we need to remember, him and Nancy never walked into Celtic Park and went, we're going to be head of football operations and manager. A board and a majority or a major shareholder put them in that position, especially in Tisdale's case. He had this sort of vague remit where it's head of football operations and he was going to do academy and he was going to do recruitment. And we're now, you know, almost 2 years on. And I couldn't tell you anything he's touched where you could see progression. And I kind of looking at, again, I don't want to turn into a rant against the board, but to me, he's just a sign of a process that's protected by the lack of governance or ability to assess and evaluate and then put together a coherent plan that's beneficial for Celtic. And so I just sort of think it's a sad day. I feel sorry for Nancy in some ways. In others, I kind of think he made a rod for his own back. I think there were certain things tactically that he got horrifically wrong. I think he went, I understand the process of philosophy and you want to implement your plan, but I think there's a way to go about that that could have been more of a step-by-step process that brought people along with him. I think Andrew and I discussed this in the last pod where we said it's almost like he tried to make too much of an impression, and I think that's maybe potentially been what's killed him with the existing players. But you know, we are where we are, and you know, Martin O'Neill's back, and it's the right decision. It's not a brave decision, I don't think. It's not a bold decision. Personally, I think it's overdue. I think I said in the last one, I think Dundee United was kind of the one for me that done it. But it's the right decision, and you know, we just kind of have to hope that eventually there's going to come a point where the penny's going to drop with Desmond, with the board, that a lot of things need to change. But right now, we've given ourselves a situation now with Martin O'Neill and Sean Maloney and Fotheringham. Stevie Woods now looks like he's staying, which appeared that he was going out the door. Where we spoke about in the last podcast, there are objectives to be met this season. I think we're now in a better position to give ourselves a chance of meeting those objectives.
So I'm going to get on to the board governance bit in a minute, but Matthew, I didn't give you advance notice of this, so I was trying to think of some historical context. Both Steen and Clough lasted 44 days at Leeds United. Just while you guys were speaking, I did a quick Google check, and Bielsa lasted 2 days at Lazio. Luigi Del Neri was sacked by Porto before he managed a game. And Ten Hag lasted 62 days at Bayer Leverkusen. So in the Celtic context, what has Nancy overtaken on a permanent basis, not temporary managers who've been in charge for a wee bit?
Yeah, by a matter of days, it was John Barnes. Barnes and McCarrie were both effectively 8 months, but there's a few days, I can't remember the exact number in between it, but there's literally a matter of days that separates the two. So you've got Barnes as the one that was the shortest reign, then basically McCarrie on effectively the same. Then you've got Mowbray, who was on 9 months. After that, it all gets a bit bigger, basically. So, I mean, I said at the start, Willie Mailey, I think it was, 514 months in charge, as against, Nonce's one. Then you've got Jimmy McGrory, 236. Jock Steen, 160. The only other one in three figures is Billy McNeil because of the two ones, and that was 105. And then after that, you go to varying other numbers. I think if you're looking, even if you look in the context of the 21st century, the longest person in the 21st century has been Neil Lennon, if you count both reigns. Then it's Rodgers, then it's O'Neill, then it's Strachan, and then you get down to sort of, numbers that are much of a muchness. Dial and Postecoglou, there was only a month in between, so 23 and 24 months being marginally longer. And now you've got poor Wilfred entering, as I'm sure that, where he won't be happiest, that the wrong end of the record books. At least if it's positive, he's not quite matched. I think it was I'm trying to remember the name of the manager. There was a guy at Torquay who I think officially lasted something like 10 minutes because he got appointed and then they completed a takeover deal and the takeover people basically said, nah. And it was literally in that short space of time. I can't actually remember the name of the guy. It's actually a guy I remember as a player, but I can't remember.
You're going to laugh.
Liam
Rossinier's dad.
Oh, right, okay.
You're about to become Chelsea manager.
Right, okay. Right, that is funny then. Yeah, so that was, so 10 minutes. So at least from Nance's perspective, at least he's not quite matched the 10 minute thing. But yeah, from a Celtic perspective, comfortably the shortest reign.
Uncomfortably.
Yeah. I think maybe the most damning thing, which I suppose is, I think you said a second ago, Andrew, it might have been you, Brian, but I think the most damning thing is that Martin O'Neill's previous temporary appointment basically matched the length of Nance's actual permanent reign. And that's, something's gone wrong, very, very, very badly wrong, if those are the sort of numbers that you're able to throw about. So, yeah, from a Celtic perspective, you've got to think, I mean, for all time, I suppose it does cement himself, Nancy, into Celtic record books, because it's difficult to imagine a scenario, again, you never know, hopefully not, but it's difficult to imagine a scenario where anyone is going to beat this record of 33 days. If we can avoid World War III, which I suppose increasingly perhaps looks unlikely, but, if there's still a Celtic 500 years from now, you've got to assume that one way or another, Nance's name is still going to come up as a trivia question or anything like that.
So, question I have for everyone, what happens if Martin O'Neill loses 6 out of his next 8?
Doesn't matter in the slightest. It won't matter now. I think Martin O'Neill, one, he's not going to lose 6 out of the 8. He's simply not going to do that. That was, I think we spoke about this last week in advance of the Rangers game. The Rangers game was damning because it was game number 8. That was the problem that Nonsi had, in the sense O'Neill had come in 8 games, you know, including against Rangers, including 2 in Europe, one of which was away, and he got 7 wins. Nonsi, on the other hand, you know, even if we'd won on Saturday, it would have still been 5 losses out of 5 losses out of 8. But to lose 6 of 8, O'Neill will have a better record. But the reality is, even if O'Neill lost 8 out of the next 8, which again he's not going to do, it wouldn't matter. O'Neill is very much the sensible choice to get us to summer, when hopefully we can then get into a more sort of permanent state of affairs and appoint somebody that's actually going to be, you know, a 3 to 4 year appointment rather than the problems that we've had for now.
Ross, do you think that O'Neill will now be talking to what's left of the recruitment team about signings?
I don't know. I think, you know...
Is that dude for Chelsea? Is he doing it now? You know, you're just in the door and so him and David Pleat.
They brought up a scout from Chelsea, I believe, but the guy from Chelsea was the head of emerging international talent at Chelsea. He'd been there for a long time. Beyond that, I don't know very much about him. I hate being negative about anything they were saying. It was really easy this season. A friend of mine sort of said to me, when he heard about that point, he's like, normally when it comes to Celtic or any team you'd go, a guy who's been at such a big club with such a big recruitment budget like Chelsea, if you looked at any club bringing someone like that in, you would be pretty positive about it. He went, but knowing what he knows, he went, Celtic in general terms pay people in those positions probably about, you're lucky if it's a quarter of what someone like Chelsea or an English Premiership team would pay. He went, so his question was, why is he at Celtic? I was like, oh, I don't know. But that, I think that question's valid. I don't know where Martin O'Neill goes with the recruitment. We'd sort of said this about the fact that even before Nancy came, and when we're talking about who's going to be the next manager, or because O'Neill was doing well, do you give him to the end of the season? And I suppose one of the things that people pointed to is it's difficult to then do recruitment with a manager you know who's going to be departing in 6-8 months. Because then you've got to consider who's going to come next. And people can say, well, Celtic next, they might go back to the idea where we're going to get a manager who will continue to play some sort of variation of 4-3-3. You're then making the assumption that managers like the same player types in each individual role. And that's not the case, because you can have so many different player types for just one position. And so it's, you know, it's a bit idealistic to then go, we know what we're going to sign with a view to who comes next. Because to be honest, Denny, you trust Celtic to know who comes next, given what's went on? Do you trust them to appoint someone capable? You know, all these different things. But I suppose before we switch over to something else, you were asking about Nancy and his record, and I'm gonna admit to who this is. I could have stole this. But my good friend Josh McCafferty, who's been on here with us before, said to me, my Christmas tree has been up longer than Nancy lasted at Celtic.
He's one of those guys that doesn't do the 12 days of Christmas.
The 12 days of Christmas is...
I know.
It's post-Christmas.
Yeah, I know, it's no.
See, because if for those listening to it as soon as I record it, your Christmas tree's got to come down by midnight tonight.
Well, Josh was saying he took his down day and he went, my tree has lasted longer than Wilfred Nancy. So, I don't want to laugh about it because, as I say, I kind of feel bad. But if you want to look at it in a humorous way, then yes, some people have had Christmas trees up longer than Wilfred Nancy and his staff have been at Celtic.
They genuinely will. If there's a house round the corner for you, they had it up, I think I noted it was November the 25th, so genuinely.
Well, listen, you can go to the shops and buy Easter eggs now. So the Easter eggs were out before Wilfred Nancy left.
As I put on the Substack chat, he's lasted less than Liz Truss. And Liz Truss lasted, Liz Truss what, lasted what as long letter? As I can. As I was just going to say, as long as the letters.
Yeah. Would it be something more Gaelic? Would it be a kind of... A clove of garlic, more like if he was French. That probably lasts for months, a clove of garlic. I don't know.
I think it's probably, yeah.
It does in my fridge anyway.
But I mean, Ange, only 39 days, 8 games, no wins, 6 defeats, 2 draws. What we said last week, you don't bring in the ideological coaches mid-season.
That's, yeah, that's... I think, look, if you think Ange is an interesting one, because I mean, I mentioned earlier the whole, you know, probably Nonce has now cemented his place in Celtic history for the next few centuries, you know, for as long as there's a sort of, as long as we're playing football. And that might be the case, but it's also a little bit like within the context, I know I sort of talk about this a lot, but in the context of social media and things like that, there's no question people are quicker to get angry. They are quicker to sort of to organise, to create an issue against it. And it's not just in football. You only have to look at politics. I read something not long ago talking about, now, there's a slightly artificial thing to this. I always get upset when people talk about, you know, a player nowadays has got as many assists as Jimmy Johnson, because nobody counted Jimmy Johnson's assists. There was nobody, you know, we didn't have the stats back then. I mean, people might make them up, people might average them, but nobody was watching every game Celtic played back in the 60s and counting every assist. So whenever I see anything that compares the likes of, say, a modern-day player and Jimmy Johnson, I slightly shake my head. So it's similar with this, but I was reading something that sort of says, you know, all the most unpopular political leaders have basically been the last three or four. So if you look at sort of British prime ministers, now, you might argue that these are genuinely the worst leaders of all time. Maybe that actually is. It's, you know, you might say it's statistically unlikely they're all bunched together, but what's much more likely is we are much quicker to get angry. We are much quicker to say that something is wrong and we demand change and all the rest of it. Let's face it. I mentioned it, you know, let's talk about, say, Lou Macari. Obviously, Lou Macari was a bit of a different situation because whilst things weren't great, there was also, a regime change that brought about that. But John Barnes would be one to a point. But even going further back, even at periods, you know, Billy McNeil, before Billy McNeil actually went, had social media existed then, people have always been angry and sat in the pub or moaned at the games themselves. But very often that was it. I mean, what could you really do in the past? You could phone up the hotline in the Daily Record. You could phone up the Clyde phone-in or something like that. But there was very few ways to articulate in a quick sense what supporters actually believed. Whereas now, if people are angry, let's face it, there's a multitude of blogs, there's social media, there's so many ways that you can articulate that. And it does become very, very quickly then, you know, you can build a momentum against something. In the case of Nonce, it was a disaster, it was. There's no getting away from it. I mean, I think to a point he didn't understand, you know, the expectations perhaps, you know, of Celtic and within the context of Scottish football. But the reality is, in any job, it's not even about Celtic. If he'd taken over Dundee, for example, or had taken over Motherwell or something, now I know Motherwell are doing very well and Dundee are quite happy just now, but if he'd taken over teams like that and after eight games, you know, had conceded 18 goals, had an average of, you know, more than two goals a game, had lost six out of eight, the reality is people would be screaming for him to go there. So if you know any club, losing six out of eight would have been unacceptable. But particularly when you come to the biggest club in Scotland that's got comfortably the most money and so on, it doesn't take a rocket science. And I'm sure he knew himself. I strongly suspect, maybe he didn't, but I strongly suspect he left Parkhead on Saturday knowing that there was every chance that he wasn't coming back for a game anyway.
Celtic are 10th in the form table for the time he's been here. 10th out of the 12. They're now the only team in the top six that have lost six league games. Not all on him, as we know. But the stats, as you say, it's just that there's a blizzard of them that are damning. That are absolutely damning. And as you say, Matthew, the life cycle, is just the pace of life is just, it's speeded up. Everything goes so much quicker.
Well, using Matthew's analogy, how many elections did Harold Wilson lose, Matthew? Was it three?
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah, that would be about right. So I'm thinking back to... Yeah, three seems about right to me, across different spells, obviously, because obviously he was and wasn't Prime Minister at different times. Yeah, I think that probably is right.
So there's no way a political... Nobody who leads the Conservative or Labour Party can lose one election now. Yeah, he lost all them. And then, you know, Andrew, you recall, I remember, you know, watching St. and Greavesy, and they'd be laughing. They'd be laughing at Spanish and Italian clubs who'd fired another manager.
Yeah. Remember because, Jesus Gil at Atletico, did he no fire, like, was it 7 or 8 in one season? Or was it 11 or something? There's something ridiculous.
And we'd all be laughing, saying, you know, typical Johnny Foreigners, you know, they've got no patience. Because a manager at the time could, in England, get relegated out of the First Division and come back again. John Lyle did that with West Ham. And can you imagine Billy McNeil? We talked on the last podcast about the 1981 season, losing 5-1 up at Dens Park and chucking the league away. Can you imagine any manager surviving that? Was it 80? Can you imagine any manager surviving that these days? So Matthew's point about the speed of things just in general in life have gone, and it is that thing that...
Tolerance yeah. Tolerance is just nosedived. But tolerance for failure. I mean, we talk about Rangers, we've talked about the team on the other side. We used to scoff about them being permy ragers. Mm-hmm. We've got support now that are permanently raging for A, B, C, or D. That's just how it is. That's just how it is. I mean, the toxicity, that's the one thing that's the one relief, that's the one major relief, is like lancing that poison that was like really unpleasant.
Anyway, let's move on away from the philosophical onto the physical. It doesn't matter who we've got in charge, Ross, if we don't have a striker.
Holy guacamole.
We're continuing to be in trouble. I mean, I said this during the Dundee United game, and I said it on Saturday. If we had a striker, we'd be 3-4 up. And then I immediately say, and if we had a striker, Brendan Rodgers would still be manager. So the intrinsic issue we've got, and much as Martin did a brilliant job, he won a couple of games by the skin of his teeth. There was the wonder goal of Callum McGregor in a performance that would have football banned at Love Street, or whatever St. Mirren Park's called these days. And there was, you know, so the basic issue here is we need a striker. Like yesterday. Is it not? I put it to you that all of this goes back to we sold Kyogo and didn't buy another striker. Ross.
Is that to me? Yes. Sorry. We've so many holes in our team that, striker's a huge hole. And I suppose relating it to Nancy and then looking at O'Neill, how many goals do you need to score to win a game? One. That's it. You need one goal. As Celtic supporters, we kind of expect more, but you need one goal to win a game. You need the defence and you need a team capable of keeping it tight to ensure the other team don't score. You don't need to complicate it. On Saturday, we could have, at half-time, we'd missed a barload of chances, fair enough. There was some horrific striking, some really bad misses. It's not just the strikers that have been missing good opportunities. Everybody's been at it. Trusty, the header at the start of the game, Trusty should have buried that. And, you know, we could talk about statistics and variance and everything else, but ultimately, confidence is a huge part of football. And a confident Trusty might bury that. A confident Trusty under Martin O'Neill was playing like a rock-solid defender who had totally done away with the Brendan Rodgers' weak as piss comment. He was playing a solid 7 out of 10 every game, giving away very, very little, and just doing a really good job. And going to specifically Saturday, and even against Dundee United, my problem isn't the fact that, you know, necessarily that we're missing chances. You've got that and the fact that we were giving up chances for free. Like, I stupidly allowed myself to sit and analyse the second half. And I chatted to Eddie about it last night via a chat and sent him some images and described the three goals. And honestly, they'd make you sick. Even if you were just teaching kids, you'd be sick at the fact that that's what your team was doing on the pitch. And it's not just strikers, it was everybody. It's from Callum McGregor to Trusty to Schmeichel, Jesus, Schmeichel. And Johnny Kenny, obviously, you know, every one of them was failing. So, you know, yeah, we need strikers. That I agree. We've needed a striker for quite a long time. Even when Kyogo was here, especially under Rodgers, Kyogo wasn't effective because of what he was being asked to do. You were still getting goals at him, but they were becoming less and less frequent. And obviously he's moved on and they've become even less and less frequent. So, yeah. Lots of problems, lots of things to solve. But I suppose, again, I wrote the article that said when we got Nancy, the board needed to sign someone that said, this is a Nancy signing. And he needed to be already signed. So as soon as that registration opened, he was in the door. Permanent signing, probably ideally a striker or certainly someone at the top end of the pitch. And what have we got? We've got a wing back who, you know, two seasons ago had a phenomenal season in La Liga, but he went to Bournemouth, really struggled, got injured, played two games in the summer at the Gold Cup. He's played one game this season where he got sent off. He's come up here probably with a desire that, as people have pointed out, there's a World Cup coming up. But we've not brought in a player who's carrying good form or is match fit or match ready. We brought a loan signing in. And what, like, even if Nancy had stayed, what message did that send? It sent a message that, we're not so sure. And then most of the players that we're being linked with currently are right wingers. And I said this to Andrew beforehand. What for? If Wilfred Nancy was the manager, he doesn't play with wingers. He plays with tens. And people can say, oh, a player can be converted to this, that and rest of it. We're a club, not even just a team. We're a club that's in deep shit. And you want to talk about trying to convert players and do this, that and the rest of it. That is just incompetence. It's of incompetence on every possible level, from recruitment to board to whoever else is involved in touching these things. They're is no logic to anything they're doing. So to me, Nancy was stitched up. We were unfortunate in the sense that we took a huge risk. And you said that for a board that's risk averse, they took a huge risk. But they had an opportunity to really back it up. Before the window opened, they could have been signing players and saying, January 1st, these players are signed, they're done. They never done it.
But isn't the challenge with that the scouts will have spent September to November looking for players that would fit Brendan Rodgers' system? They will have been speaking to agents, lining those players up, and then on the 1st of December, they are then looking for a completely different type of player. Not necessarily in every position, but certainly in terms of things.
A striker.
I know, a good striker fits in any system.
So if I leave the striker aside for a minute, but for some of the other positions, in terms of being able to bring in a number, and isn't January, and I know, I'm not trying to duck out, I'm just saying, because one of my criticisms is whenever the board in the last few years have said, well, the challenge is January's a tough window. I get that. I accept January is a difficult window. Who wants to sell a striker in January who's scoring goals? Not a team going for Europe, not a team going for titles, and not a team who's wanting to avoid relegation. Nobody. So the vast majority of teams in the vast majority of leagues are not wanting to sell a goal scorer in January. So I accept that January. So my criticism would always be, so don't leave yourself that you've got to buy these players in January. You know that January's a tough window. So make yourself in a position that you're not having to buy those players in the January by the summer.
The two setups that are distinct from that, the MLS in Japan, because they're in the close seasons, aren't they?
And a lot of Scandinavia and South America. It's not as if the entirety of football is currently playing football. There's a lot of leagues where football is being played. There's a lot of leagues where clubs won't want to sell their best players, but the gap between them and us is significant enough that a player would go.
Yeah, do you mean close seasons? I mean, I just mean, what's the off-season?
January is difficult. You're right, the club's off-season. So you've got MLS, you've got Brazil, you've got some of the Scandic leagues, Sweden, Norway, Denmark's currently playing, Japan's off-season. I want to say Mexico. There's enough places that if you're looking closely enough, you will find players. I agree, January is a difficult window because is a slightly narrower window in the sense of the leagues that you're then looking at are a wee bit further away, apart from the Scandic ones. But again, I just keep on going back to the same thing. This is not just something that's just happened over the past couple of months. This is now years of Celtic's inability to get simple processes right. And it goes back to the summer. I know that you're a big fan of Brendan Rodgers, but the decision in the summer to allow the Brendan Rodgers situation to happen, knowing full well that there was going to be this sort of season of uncertainty because his contract was coming to an end, is another decision that's led to this moment, that's led to Nancy, that's led to this process, that's led to a recruitment team looking for players for one manager, then having to look for another. Now they're having to look for potentially another, because as I say, it's then Well, I'm saying a striker's a striker, but he's not. A striker is dependent on what you want from him.
Yeah, so Nancy, as you pointed out, Kyogo's a different type of... Kyogo's an Ange striker, and he's not a Brendan Rodgers striker.
But a good recruitment system would have a variety of options for different types of player profiles, and they would basically have like a ranking system where they go, if you want a poacher, these are the best five that we think are available to us. If you want someone who's going to be a sort of playmaker-type striker who's not going to score 20 goals, but he'll get you 10... but you'll set up and bring the play 10. We've got another set of rankings that ranks them. If you want a winger that does this, here's another set of rankings. We must have the only recruitment system in the world that literally goes, you need to tell me exactly what you want. We don't prepare for anything. It's just like, well, we're not prepared for that. But why the fuck not? Like, yeah. Honestly, what are you paid for? Do your job.
Do you know what? You know what
Ross makes? I think Ross makes a valid point in the context that it's weird. Everyone wants to be the next big thing. I think that's what it sometimes feels like in football management. And I'm not quite sure the decade we'd see that's got. I mean, most of my, when it comes to Celtic history, most of the stuff I do focus on is like the club's early history. And what's really interesting is, you know, when you go back for decades, you know, it really was, you know, really going back to early football, even before there was a Celtic, certainly in the 1800s, early 1900s, the consistent system was always 2-3-5. So that was it. You played with two full-backs, which is what you would have called centre-halves, as you would do as nowadays. You had your three half-backs, including, confusingly, the centre-half, which meant centre and midfielder, and you had your five forwards. And I think in those days, now, obviously there was no great scouting networks in those days, but it would actually be very easy because everybody played the same. Every club basically played 2-3-5, and everyone roughly played in a similar position. If you were a fullback at one club, you would be a fullback at another club. If you were an outside right at one club, you would be an outside right at another. You know, there was no element of, oh, we like to, you know, sit back, or we like to, you know, switch our plays and all this type of thing. In those days, then, it would have been quite easy. It wouldn't actually matter your scouting network, because you would just need to say, do you know what, at some point we're going to need a forward, a centre forward, fine. At some point we're going to need a fullback. Fine, here's the people. Obviously, they didn't have those scouting networks. Nowadays, I think there is a truth in saying that there are different ways that managers play and so on. But what Ross is saying is absolutely correct. It's physically impossible. And also, it would be a bit strange to sign someone who can literally do one thing only. The exception to that, marginally, I suppose, is a goalkeeper, in the sense that, you know, you're not going to sign a goalkeeper but then say to him, but maybe you could play on the left wing. Although with the way Casper is, maybe that would be a better idea just now. You know, that would maybe be slightly safer than putting him. I still like to think maybe he's a centre forward. You know, maybe that, you know, his striking of the ball isn't usually too bad. So maybe we should have tried him there on Saturday and things would have been better. But the club needs to have, as Ross is saying, a much more speedy ability to sign. And I think the valid point, you know, especially given that we were so worried, everyone was so worried about Nancy. The reality is they did need a statement. They needed something to suggest, you know, we truly back him. Because let's face it, for example, let's say that Johnny Kenny, you know, had maybe taken one extra chance, or let's say that one of the numerous chances we had in the opening 50 to 55 minutes of the game had been taken and we'd gone on to win Saturday. Or even especially if we'd just not lost on Saturday. Because I think if we'd won on Saturday, clearly Nancy would still be in charge. And if we'd drawn, I think he probably still would have been as well. Now, where would we be sitting just now? Would there have been, do we think the club would have suddenly today or tomorrow come and said, right, in addition to the fullback we signed, or the sort of the wing back that we signed, here's now a forward and here's another one showing we back them? Or do we think that this would have been a fairly typical January of we'd have sort of limped on and then we'd have got to the end of the month and sort of shifted around to see which one or two temporary loan signings we could get?
Well, so I put a piece in the site. We had a player whose work permit was approved before Christmas who we haven't signed yet. There was a meeting at Hampden. The Hearts player, who Hearts have signed and is playing, and the Celtic player. It's the Ivory Coast guy who's currently playing in Israel. So, to be fair to the recruitment people, stuff's gone. I mean, so that is a player who the agent's been spoken to, the player's been identified, a report's been created, it's been put in front of the appropriate people, it's been approved, we've gone and got the work permit, and the deal's not been finalised yet.
Is that because we thought he was going and we don't know if we now want him?
Well, actually, he's a right wing. He's a right winger. So he's probably more suited to be a signing now than he was when we got the work permit. That's what's odd about it.
So I'm confused then. Like, why was that even a conversation? Ultimately, like, I get what you're saying, that the recruitment team would have been looking potentially more at players for Rodgers. But then why would you then go, we're going to sign off on a right winger for a manager who doesn't use right wingers? It's bizarre. It's like signing in Nomura and then going, well, by the way, he's not going to play. Like, why? We're not in a position to take those kinds of punts. The player that Hearts have signed, perfect example. We need a right back. So what did they do? They went and got a right back who had played pretty much every game for his club this season, played particularly well for his club this season, regardless of the level, which is the level below Eredivisie in Holland. But he played well. His team were playing well. And Hearts have looked and they've used analytics and whatnot and they've went, this guy fits what we want. He has the fundamental bits to do what we need him to do. And as long as he can raise his level a wee bit, we'll be fine. He comes in, they get their permit, he's in, he plays on Saturday. Now, fair enough, it's Livy. But literally everybody who's seen him looked at him and went, just what we need. Does all the bits that we need. And if he does that for the rest of the season, we'll be fine. We, on the other hand, have went, we've got Wilfred Nancy, who's trying desperately hard to make a system work that requires two tens, wing-backs, three centre-halves and a striker. And our board are approving the signing of a right winger.
Yeah, but to be fair to the board, that then comes through the head of football operations.
But so No, I'm sorry. At some point, you have to go, he's a right winger. Surely the board are not that stupid that they look at Nancy's system and go, he doesn't use them. Why would you sign that off? It's ridiculous.
Because if a chief executive of a football club overrules the head of football operations, one of those two people should be fired that night.
Well, I would say both should be fired on that.
Because he's the chief executive. He's the business person. It is not his fucking job to tell the football people. No, it's not.
His job is to be accountable.
No, it is not the job of the chief executive to be authorised. If we have a head of football operations, which is in effect a director of football, he is the guy in charge. So Celtic will have a guy in charge of the retail division. They will have a guy in charge of the finances, Chris Mackay. And they will have a guy, and they had a guy in charge of the football. I do not, I mean, that's my whole criticism. Dermot Desmond gets involved. I don't want the board saying, no, I don't think you should be signing that guy. If the presentation comes through from the head of football operations, and this is where it depends how that message then goes from the scouts through the manager to the head of football operations. If the head of football operations says, we've discussed the players available with the manager and the manager has said he wants this guy.
You don't think the board should question that logic? A right winger for a team that doesn't play with right wingers? That's bizarre.
Should the manager not be questioning that logic?
No, but I've just... Wait. You've just missed what I said, Andrew. I've just said the head of football operation goes, there's the report, there's the manager's sign-off on it, that's the player the manager wants.
Sorry, right. Yep.
So if that happens and the chief executive says no, then I'm baffled as to why we would be supporting the chief executive in that situation.
Yeah, well, I mean, we want them to butt out. We want the suits to butt out.
Yeah.
And one of them doesn't butt out, we believe, in Dermot Desmond. So we want a demarcation. We want, you know, like a... We want there to be a kind of tissue wall between...
I'm looking for... If I'm the chief executive, I'm looking for a robust case to come from the football division and I want sign-off from the manager. I want the report from the chief scout who's scouted on that. I want the report of the scout who scouted on him. I want the sign-off of the chief scout. I want the sign-off of the manager. And I want the sign-off of the head of football operations. And if I've got all of that in the report, and they're saying, and the head of football operations is the direct line, if that report is saying, this is the guy the manager really wants, I'm wanting the chief executive to say, right, fine, I'm going to go and sign that, because that's what you've said that you really want.
I mean, what will happen now in the sense of, like... God, did anybody watch, we're just coming on air after Martin O'Neill's interviews dropped, his comeback interview, And he looks like a man who's made a decision to me. That's what's scaring me a wee bit. He looks like a man who's made a decision against his better judgment.
I only heard it. I listened to it. I didn't watch it. I only listened to it.
Because you know what? Because see, when he came in before, there was absolutely no pressure on him. It was, let's see if he can get a turnout this team. Now everybody expects that he's going to instantly turn this team around because he did it a month ago. Or did it 2 months ago, I should say. He did it 2 months ago.
I don't agree that there's more pressure on him now. I think he's in a similar scenario to last time. And if anything, there might be a less pressure. Because I think there's an element where, yeah, it would be great. Don't get me wrong. It would be fantastic if he comes in and just repeats what he did last time. And we go on, you know, basically, effectively an 8-game winning run. I know we lost one European game in there. But so, next 8 games, let's say we lose one of the European games and we win all the other 7. That would be fantastic. I don't think, by and large, people really expect that. I think what we are, in some ways, we are back to the scenario that would have been best for Wilfred Nancy to have taken over. Nancy's biggest problem was, if he'd come in off the back of Rodgers leaving,
yeah,
there would have been a sympathy, there would have been a sense of, well, we've just lost the Hearts, we lost the Dundee, yeah, this is going to take a while. His problem was he came in off the back of a fantastic run. Let's face it, for a while, the narrative, I know it's gone back a wee, and clearly everyone's always complained about the board, but for a while the narrative was, Brendan Rodgers, what was he doing? If O'Neill had been there, we'd have qualified for the Champions League, and we'd have all this extra money, and things would be great. So suddenly, when Nancy comes in then, he's not replacing a guy who was struggling, who everybody agreed, you know, maybe not everybody, but, you know, many people agreed had to go, and where morale was low. He was coming in just ahead of a cup final on a fantastic winning run, including, you know, one of our best European results for a number of years. O'Neill coming back for the second time. Let's case it right. There's effectively two scenarios. He either turns it around, does what he did before, and we go on and we win the league, in which case, you know, legendary status, which was already fairly strong, is now utterly cemented beyond anything whatsoever. Alternatively, we carry on, not 6 losses in 8 games, but we have a bit of a hit and miss. Let's say we don't win the league. Slightly maybe depends who was to win it. But even if we didn't, even if we ended the season with nothing, there would still be a sense of that was the board's fault. Martin O'Neill came back, he answered the call. And if he'd only been allowed to stay the first time, this would have been different. You know, if they just never had that 1 month nightmare, you know, that 1 month dream sequence, actually he'd have won us the League Cup. We'd have at least not lost to Hearts. We'd have beat Rangers. I know this might not be true, but it's the story people will tell themselves. So I don't think there's more pressure on him now. And if anything,
he's not going to
come away negative.
It's not so much more. It's not even so much more pressure in the sense that he took over, inherited a team with the confidence through the floor. Now that confidence has now gone through that floor and it's down in our basement. I think Hannibal Lecter is eating that confidence alive at the moment. You know, look at his favela beans or whatever. That's how far that confidence is. But now we're going to find out. I was saying to Ross off there, you know, the famous story, which I had confirmed by a couple of players that when he was appointed in 2000, the players were told to assemble in the dressing room, and they assembled in the dressing room and he just popped his head through the door and apparently said, 21 points, 21 fucking points. That's not happening again. And shut the door on them. Do you know what he has to do this time? Assemble them in the dressing room, come through, and I'll even allow him to open the door and come in and address them right in the middle of the room and say, right, guys, if you want to show that it's now your chance to show it wasn't you, it was the last manager. That's got to be his message. If you're moaning about the system, you don't have to play that system anymore. I'll give you a system that I gave you before that you were comfortable in. Now you got to show that you're better than you were showing in the last 30-odd days.
I'm glad you said that, Andrew, because I was slightly worried he was going to put his head through the door and say, based on what Nancy did, if we can get 21 points for the rest of the season, we'll be happy.
But Ross, do you know something that Andrew touched on there? One of the things I noticed about Martin first time, he was talking about confidence. Everything he was doing seemed to be just reminding the players that they're winners, reminding these are good players in the dressing room. And the interviews with Nancy just seemed to be continually talking about how he was having to teach the players how to be better players. seemed to that they felt as though there was a change from Martin lifting them up to Nancy always almost saying, God, I didn't realise how shite you are and I'm going to have to make you better. Do you think confidence can just a swing of confidence can make a massive difference to this team?
Confidence is everything for a football player. Like everything. Confidence is everything. You know, if you're going to be successful in life, if you're successful in your business, confidence is a huge part of it. Martin O'Neill, I kind of am with Matthew. I think Martin O'Neill doesn't have to do a lot to turn this team around, because I think tomorrow morning, those players will be going into training feeling relieved. They'll feel like we do today. They'll feel relieved. They'll be relieved at the fact that you're going to go into training. They're going to know what they're going to get. They're going to know what's going to be asked of them. They know that he's going to put them in positions where they go, you know, if nothing else, this is familiar. So you're reducing the risk of them making basic errors for the fact that they're then thinking about something else. And then for there, we just see where we go. But confidence is going to be everything for them. I think Callum McGregor will look like a different player against Dundee United. I think the marked difference, he's kind of always the benchmark for our team. He's the captain. He's the guy you look at. You look at him under Martin O'Neill, he's popping up a last-minute winner at St Mirren. You look at him under Nancy and he's spending more time talking to him on the touchline than doing anything else. I think you'll see a totally different set of players. And I think part of that will be relief. And then I think exactly as O'Neill said in his interview, confidence will be everything. And that's his job, whether it's, you know, before a game, whether it's at half-time, he'll build them up. That's his skill. His skill is making a guy like Trusty believe that he can be a solid 7 out of 10 defender, do his job properly. His job is making a guy like Callum McGregor believe that he's got the freedom to go and properly influence a game without any sort of new ideas where everybody's got that feeling of discomfort. That's his skill. That's the one thing that, you know, Martin O'Neill will give that team, will be confidence. For what he lacks in certain other areas, he's got that ability in spades. You know, I can't see a scenario where he loses 6 of 8.
Oh, I wouldn't say so,
I understood the question in the sense of what would happen if he, I just don't see that scenario playing out. The big question will be is, he has, you know, any Celtic manager, even with a 6-point gap, has to win the league.
He was talking about that tonight, have to win the league. He was talking about that tonight. And a bit of confidence. I'm convinced Celtic will win Saturday. I know that's in bygone days that wouldn't be a great kind of like a, you know, like leap of faith or whatever. But now it's like, wow, you're predicting Celtic are going to win a game. They're going to win it Saturday. Hold me back.
I'm sure I read that there's the league's only ever been won by teams losing 4 or fewer games.
No, that was rubbish.
Actually, fairness to the guy that posted it then said he'd asked AI, which is always a bad idea when you're talking
never
about.
Ask AI.
But no, because I actually went through and did all the stats of it. Like, there's been multiple times.
Multiple, yeah. I looked up Celtic.
Multiple occasions that Celtic have lost, you know, have won the league. The most of which being probably in many ways, not my lifetime or Ross's, but your two's lifetime, arguably the best league win. Which would be 10 men won the league.
And I actually thought he was just meaning
9 times that season.
I thought the guy was just meaning since it turned into the SPL.
No, he actually said since there had been a Scottish league, so going back to 1890.
Ah, right. Because I was thinking he meant just since, because I was thinking, no, it'll have happened years ago. So I thought he meant just since it's been the SPL.
Yeah.
So in the last 20 years.
It happened in 2013, it happened in 98. It happened, oh, there was like, there's like, it happened 2009, I think. Like, there's been loads of them. Just for Celtic. So I didn't even look at any other club. I don't know about you, Matthew, but I just looked
at it. I only looked at it for Celtic. I mean, if you gave me a second, I would actually find the thing that I put. But there was just so many. There was just so many where it had happened. It was not a sort of an occasional thing or a reg thing or anything like that. It was numerous chances that he'd, numerous occasions it had happened. And see, if you give me a little second, I'll actually look back and try and find it. But yeah, as I say, the most obvious one was 9 times in the 1979. So, you know, if you're going to lose 9 times, then, you know, we've still got quite a few more that we need to do.
Any, not get that many more.
So,
7 losses in 2012-13.
Yes.
24 wins, 7 draws, 7 losses, and we won the league with 79.
I have to say, having watched both Rangers and Hearts at Celtic Park, I don't think it'd be I don't want to count my chickens. I don't think it would be an incredible turnaround. I don't think we would need an incredible turnaround to be better than those two.
They don't. You know what? I was watching Rangers on Saturday. I was thinking to myself, Motherwell must be looking at this and going, how the hell did we lose to this team a week ago? Well, we know, I suppose. I think I'll penalty them.
Sorry, I've got the stuff now. I've got to say, I knew I had it somewhere. Basically, in terms of the number of losses you need, so on 6 occasions, we've lost 5 times and still won the league. On 5 occasions, we've lost 6 times and won the league. On 2 occasions, we've lost 7 times and won the league. And as I say, on 1 occasion, we've lost 9 times. So it just wasn't true. I think the reality is, there's not really a rule. I think it sounds like science, but it's not. Even if it was the case, see if a team had never previously won the league, you know, with more than 4 losses or 5 losses or anything like that, that wouldn't mean it can't happen this season. You know, fundamentally, if you have got some reasonably matched teams, you can debate if that's equally good or equally bad. But if you've got teams that over the course of the season are of a similar level, then ultimately, teams can always take points off one another. Hearts big scenario. I mean, Hearts have been phenomenal this season at playing us and Rangers. You know, that's where the problem Hearts have had, and ultimately they are still 6 clear, so they're still very much in the driving seat. But is usually, I know it's slightly different, what normally happens in a given year is that we can consistently beat, I don't mean this as a criticism or as any disrespect, but we can beat your Falkirks, we can normally beat your Motherwells fairly consistently. So on the other hand, you know, very often can challenge us, as they have done, and beat us over, maybe not to the extent they have done this season, but their problem comes that when they go to Livingston, suddenly they maybe drop points or anything like that. That's obviously, and obviously McInnes, Tony Bloom will know this, if that's what Hearts can sort, then it puts us in a very different situation. My honest answer is that I think, you know, we're talking about what does O'Neill do tomorrow. I think he does get us confidence, but as well as confidence, I think you see the position and the opportunity that momentum potentially brings. You know, we think about it, we've got a home game on Saturday. Now, Dundee United are not in any great shakes just now. You know, they're sort of been a bit up and down. They've just lost, just like we have. You know, they've just lost the Derby game. So they're not coming to Celtic Park, especially now under O'Neill, with huge confidence. We then go to Falkirk. Now, not saying it's an easy game in any way, absolutely not. You need to win it. But easily feasible that we beat Falkirk. Now, if you do that, you're then playing Talbot. Now, with the best will in the world, and there's no disrespect here, you know, if we're, you know, that would see O'Neill getting shoved at the door. That would be the end of his legacy if we lost. But we're not going to lose to Talbot. So there's 3 very winnable games in a row. Yeah, okay, slightly harder. I suppose if you win those 3 games, as long as you don't get hammered in Italy, especially if you could take something, even a point, you go to Tynecastle and suddenly psychologically things feel very different. Suddenly, you know, you're on a bit of a run. I know there's lots of ifs, buts and maybes, you know, and it's very easy to go, well, if this, then this, and then this. And if all these things happen, then that'll be the outcome. We don't know what will be the case, but I can easily see us winning on Saturday. I can see us going to Falkirk next week and winning. I do see us obviously beating Talbot. I'm going to rule out Bologna on the basis that even if we lose that game, unless you get hammered, if we've won the 3 games leading up to it, we'll still be happier going to Tynecastle. And if you manage to go to Italy and even take a point, then allied to hopefully domestic wins, you suddenly go to Tynecastle in a very, very different psychology. Now, that isn't to say we'll beat Hearts. Hearts are doing very well. They've beat us twice this season, home and away. They might well beat us that day. But I think a Celtic under O'Neill going to Tynecastle is a drastically different scenario from how I suspect the players and definitely fans would have felt if Nancy had stayed.
Particularly, Andrew, if we've got a couple of players in.
Well, this is it. Especially a striker. We keep coming back to it. You know? Yeah. Surely you were talking before about a handful of players. Surely there will be a handful of players by then.
You would like to think so.
Oh, it's like almost like, you know what I mean? It's like those words tiptoe out your mouth because you're so like, no, I'm sure they'll sign a handful of players.
So two things, just because obviously need to wrap up, but people don't want a 2-hour podcast about it. Ross touched on earlier at the beginning, and I moved away onto the history of it because I wanted to cover that. Ross covered at the beginning the responsibility for this mess and the liability in the boardroom for this mess. And it's stuff. Firstly, as someone pointed out to me yesterday, we made a bigger deal of the announcement of Martin O'Neill coming back, like, first time, than we did over the appointment of Nancy, of the full-time manager Nancy. Martin O'Neill got a proper press conference with people there in the room. Nancy just got a pre-recorded interview and move on. It was almost as if we didn't believe in Nancy at the beginning.
Two-and-a-half-year deal as well always seemed a little kind of shy of what you would expect. I know they've done the one-year rolling contracts previously, but actually a kind of a fixed-term deal, 2.5 years for a new manager. Don't think I've ever seen that before.
Yeah, so there was that, and I often used to, you know, talk about WWE, talk about sports entertainment. But it gets back to what we were talking about in the last podcast with Matthew was saying about we've reached a point where we're £70 million to make and winning all the time. People are looking for what takes them to the next level. And then there's an element of people sometimes want a bit of show business around it. They just want something. They don't want the functionary appointment. They don't want the, well, I suppose it makes sense appointment. Sometimes people just want the showbiz appointment. Even if it's for that, you know, it's like letting off a firework that just sprays for a wee minute. They just want that bit.
Is Celtic kind of Fast and Furious 11 with all these car crashes and people getting chucked off bridges and all this kind of stuff?
So in all of that, I suppose the obvious question is, where's this responsibility? Where's the liability? Do you think anything's going to come of that, Andrew?
I mean, what is the body count at Celtic this season in terms of people who've been back?
Kennedy, Brendan, John Kennedy, Jack Lyons, Paul Tisdale, Jay Lefebvre. Two people from the recruitment.
Yeah, Peter Lawwell as well.
Peter Lawwell.
Well, Nancy and his entire backroom.
Nancy. Nancy.
And I think that's his background team was 5, yeah. Is that right?
Yeah.
4. Yeah.
Was it 4? So Nancy, yeah. Plus 4, Ross.
Nancy, Ampadu, his physical strength coach and his in-game analyst.
He should have been sacked a long time ago and we were only 33 days last.
So what's that, 10, 11?
11.
It still feels like I think that there's no question there's still a sense of dysfunction. And we spoke about it a little earlier that to some extent, and again, within the context of social media and the ability of people to very quickly express an opinion, that's probably just the way of life, maybe forever now, but certainly for a long time, you know, that sense of everything's terrible and we can quickly express it. So that sort of sense isn't going away anytime soon. And whether it's football, whether it's, you know, politics, whether it's any other aspect of society, that's going to continue. Celtic, though, it just feels like hopefully we're not going to have a COVID season in the sense of, you know, not winning anything, embarrassment and all the rest of it. Hopefully there's still a chance that, you know, to save the season. And I do believe absolutely that there is, you know, ultimately. As we were joking after the game on Saturday, you know, well, you know, we started the day in second place. We've stayed in second place. You know, if you were being
by a goal or something,
we're further obviously behind Hearts. So that's a good bit of work that's going to be needed. A number of weeks it's going to take probably to catch up with Hearts. Hopefully, a couple of wins and then doing so at Tynecastle will change that. But even if we win the league, it's not going to sort of surround Celtic. There is a massive need for some sort of reset. I think that's why O'Neill's absolutely the right appointment. I think we need to get to the summer. There's already been the start of change. You know, Brian just mentioned a number of people who've left and all the rest of it. Psychologically, though, and it's that idea of a showbiz thing, we need some sort of clear reset. We need to get to the summer. We need to appoint someone that people are excited about. We need to probably see one or two changes in the board psychologically. The game I always remember that really lifted the fans, and actually he was probably a bit hard done by, but was when Jock Brown left. You know, Jock Brown had become, I mean, if social media had been about, it would have been even worse then. Yeah. But Jock Brown had very much become this symbol of everything that was wrong with Celtic and why everything was terrible. And then Jock Brown, you know, it was announced just before the game, I think it was Dundee we played, and we went out and we won 5-0, and it was just party time. Everything felt great. We probably need something similar this summer. We need to see one or two changes that allows the fans and the club to move past this sense of separation that we've got just now. We need to find some way that changes the atmosphere on the ground. We can debate the rights or wrongs of the Green Brigade and all the rest of it, but in general, locking out fans isn't a great thing. Now, I'm not saying some of them, there isn't context that comes to that, but we need to find a way. And that's what the board's job's meant to be. The board's job, and it's not just about it Celtic, any board in any organisation's meant to be about ensuring smooth sailing. It's about meant to be saying, where are we just now? Where do we want to be? How do we get there in a way that is not problematic, in a way that doesn't cost us any problems? And whether that's because you're interested in share price, whether that's because you want to see the team win, it doesn't actually change what the goal is. The goal is to give some sort of smooth sailing and to get to a better place. I think to get that, because of how far it's gone with many people, we need some sort of physical reset. My hope is that O'Neill, you know, does us one last turn, you know, turns things around, sails away into the sunset, utterly confirming his legendary status. Then this summer is an opportunity to see some further changes in the board, to see someone who's actually going to stay 3 or 4 years as manager to come in, and we move on from there.
Ross, we've got a Dundee United game on Saturday. What are you expecting to see from the team for that game?
Back four.
Fundamentals. Just get the fundamentals right. If they get the fundamentals right, then their quality will eventually start to show through. It doesn't need to be complicated. I know what yous are saying about, like, in general terms of the club, needing a bit of razzmatazz. Right now, we just need fundamentals and competence and build a platform to move off of. There's no point in trying to turn ourselves into this super fantastic, you know, Nancy's tried that. He tried to turn us into this really exciting to watch team. And we're not capable of that right now. So right now, they just need to be fundamentally sound, get the basics right, take the confidence that Martin O'Neill's going to give them. And then the club, as Matthew has said, we need a situation where we hit the summer in a good position. Winning the league puts us in a position of strength. But from that point forward, a lot of things in this club need to end. Stephen made a good point in our group chat yesterday. The one thing that you'd say the board have done quite well over the years, for the most part, is appoint managers. But when you look deeper than that and you look at the people who head up all the various departments that are meant to prop up the manager and support him, whether it's a Paul Tisdale or whether it's a Chris McCart, there are a lot of people at Celtic who have failed and continue to fail. And so it's time for a clear vision. It's time for a refresh, a proper one, not just a pay it lip service. You know, someone can draw straws to leave the club early, do a Peter Law, go and sit home for a year and then come back a year later. This is the time for something significant to change.
Needs to be the end of Scarface.
We've
got the end of Godfather 1 right now, but we need the end of Scarface.
It does. You know, again, we're saying about razzmatazz and things like that. I don't think anybody's asking for anything more than competence right now. That's how bad the situation has been. That all we're asking for is fundamentals, competence, show something for the future. It's not a difficult ask. It's not a hard task. So everybody who walks into Celtic tomorrow who earns a wage, that should be the thing in their head. Can I be competent and start building a platform where we move forward from? If you can't do that, fuck off.
Andrew, do you think that'll help?
I think because O'Neill makes it simple. And it's funny, I read a piece about the kind of the Guardiolism, about how football is moving on from the Guardiolism. And how this season there's been more goals scored from set pieces in England than I think at any time in the last, was it 10 years or something? It's now, it was 23%. And it's everything in the piece. It was Jonathan Wilson, the ever excellent Jonathan Wilson in the Guardian. Everything that was in the piece sounded like O'Neill's time has come back again in the sense of the way he plays football. The kind of, the TED Talk kind of Nancy kind of style is maybe actually going out of vogue. and O'Neill's time is coming again. It's like the long throw-ins. I know that O'Neill wasn't as rudimentary as that, but in the sense of simplistic football.
Do you know what, Andrew? I remember BBC Two, like BBC Four does, used to have theme nights.
Yes.
And I remember they had a theme night to do with football, just as we were appointing Martin O'Neill. And it was talking about Forrest and Brian Clough. And it was, talking, and it was the players talking about what Brian Clough did. And Brian Clough's was really simple. Defenders, your job is to just clear the ball and try and get it towards one of the midfielders. But just clear it. Midfielders, your job is to pass it to the strikers. Strikers, your job is to put it in the back of the net. And he just made football really, really simple. And I remember thinking, I get the impression that's how Martin O'Neill speaks to people.
Because he is a Clough acolyte, it'll be the kind of, your job, son's just to head the ball and kick it out. Kick it out now, kick it out. Sorry, you can't get through.
I was really worried we were going to get through a podcast without Andrew doing an impression.
I didn't realise that Liam Gallagher had taken on football management. And with that, I will say, everybody, thanks very much.
Right, Brian.
Cheers.
Thanks for the impression.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
We hope you enjoyed that podcast. There will be more along soon. Please share the joy of Celtic Underground. Rate us wherever you can find us on your podcast provision, and also subscribe to thecelticunderground.substack.com. As you'll be aware, there are two types of subscription. There's free subscription, where you get a certain amount of content delivered directly to your email address, and then there's a paid-for subscription, where you get even more content delivered directly to your email address as and when it comes out. Anyway, enough of me. We hope you enjoyed the podcast, and this is me, Harry Brady, saying good night and God bless. Good night.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.